Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back, Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. This is Shane Vanderhart, and we got Brian Myers in studio. Welcome back to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We appreciate you tuning in. Brian is so dedicated. He came straight from Lawrence, Kansas to the studio.
I'm not all that dedicated. I was actually going to just keep right on driving until you called me.
Come on in. Come on in. Yeah, because we got a lot to talk about. There was a debate Thursday night. And?
Really?
Yeah. And honestly, I don't think there was a clear winner looking at the overall debate. I think there were segments where you could say, okay, that was his good moment. That was the other candidate's good moment. The undercard debate, I thought, was substantive, but rather boring. There wasn't any exchange back and forth with the candidates on stage. There wasn't any pushback from the people in the undercard debate to, you know, toward the people in the primetime debate. The questions didn't really kind of open up that door, and I was actually kind of surprised about that. I want to play one clip first. It's just a 7-second clip. Santorum did get a dig in on somebody who wasn't even at the debate. You play clip 5.
Out of time, but I'm going to take some of Rand Paul's time here for a second.
As you might know, Rand Paul decided to kind of boycott the undercard debate. He thought he was going to be in the primetime debate. The polls came out the ones came out before the deadline for the Fox Business Network set, and he did not qualify.
He was not happy
for the primetime debate. He was going to end up having to go to the undercard. Then the Des Moines Register poll came out the next day, which was actually taken before the deadline but not released until the day after, which would have put him in the primetime debate.
And Rand apparently
used feelings about it.
Rand apparently used some sign language to let them know he was not happy.
Yeah, very classy of
sign
him.
Language?
He did. Oh. Yep. Yep. Anyway, so
universally understood.
Definitely. Definitely. So he had his own town hall during the debate. So anyway, it was just kind of interesting how that all transpired, but I have to say that was a pretty good dig by Rick Santorum. I'll just take some of Rand Paul's time.
That's worth a laugh.
Yeah, that was good. All right, one of the biggest exchanges I thought, this is the first time I have, not that I think Donald Trump has won debates. I don't think he's
Wait, stop right there. I still want to register my objection to the notion of a debate that gets won, because the whole thing is a completely ridiculous subjective exercise
in which
everybody has a different opinion, everybody spins it differently,
yeah,
and everybody has different criteria on what the word win means.
Okay, I think most
Just
people,
saying.
Except diehard Trump fans, think that... think that Cruz, this is the first time I personally believe anybody's gotten the better of Trump in an exchange. This was good. This is going to be a lengthy clip. We're going to probably interrupt it a little bit for some commentary, but this kind of, you know, was the first real exchange of the debate. Go ahead, it's clip 1, Ron.
I'll start with you, Senator Cruz. Now, you are, of course, a strict constitutionalist. No one would doubt that. And as you know, the U.S. Constitution says only natural-born citizens are eligible for the office of President of the United States.
So obviously, they weren't happy with that line of questioning.
You were born in Canada to an American mother, so you were and are considered an American citizen. But that fellow next to you, Donald Trump, and others have said that being born in Canada means you are not natural born, And that has raised questions about your eligibility. Do you want to try to close this topic once and for all tonight?
Well, Neil, I'm glad we are focusing on the important topics of the evening.
Zing.
Yeah. I do want to interrupt here for a second. Can you pause it, Ron?
My friend Donald said that he had had his...
Maybe.
Okay. While that was a good zing, that was a good comeback, I think it is, because it's out there, I'm kind of glad it was brought up in the debate, because I think it is important for him to deal with. Go ahead.
September, my friend Donald said that he had had his lawyers look at this from every which way, and there was no issue there. There was nothing to this birther issue. Now, since September, the Constitution hasn't changed. But the poll numbers have. And I recognize that Donald is dismayed that his poll numbers are falling in Iowa. But the facts and the law here are really quite clear. Under longstanding U.S. law, the child of a U.S. citizen born abroad is a natural-born citizen. If a soldier has a child abroad, that child is a natural-born citizen. That's why John McCain, even though he was born in Panama, was eligible to run for president. If an American missionary has a child abroad, that child is a natural-born citizen. That's why George Romney, Mitt's dad, was eligible to run for president, even though he was born in Mexico. At the end of the day, the legal issue is quite straightforward, but I would note that the birther theories that Donald has been relying on, some of the more extreme ones insist that you must not only be born on U.S. soil, but have two parents born on U.S. soil. Under that theory, not only would I be disqualified, Marco Rubio would be disqualified, Bobby Jindal would be disqualified, and interestingly enough, Donald J. Trump would be disqualified.
You think maybe he was prepared for that?
I think so.
Donald's mother was born in Scotland. She was naturalized. Now, Donald...
But I was born here.
On the issue of citizenship, Donald...
Big difference.
On the issue of citizenship, Donald, I'm not going to use your mother's birth against you.
Okay, good. Because it wouldn't work.
You're an American, as is everybody else on this stage, and I would suggest we focus on who's best prepared to be commander-in-chief, because that's the most important question facing the country.
I think we could probably stop it right there. Nailed it. I think
that's a great defense.
He knocked that out of the park. We don't have time to play it. There was an exchange between Trump and Cruz on New York values, and I'll admit, I think Trump got the better of Cruz on that. If I were Cruz and I was asked about my comments on regarding New York values, I would have gone back to, this is really what we have time to talk about. There are other issues to talk about. Moving on. I wouldn't even really acknowledged it because I don't think it really helped him. I don't think it's going to hurt him. Let's be honest here. Cruz is not going to win the New York primary, regardless of what he says.
You think?
and he's not going to win the general election should he win the nomination in New York. I think the last time New York has voted Republican was probably for Ronald Reagan over Dukakis. Because I think there's only like one or two states Dukakis won. Massachusetts. There was another route, too, that I think New York went. Anyway,
you thinking about Mondale?
I'm thinking about Mondale. Yes, I'm thinking about Mondale.
I'm not sure.
Okay, we'll have to research that. Suffice it to say, New York does not vote Republican very often.
We can say with authority.
In the presidential election. And I'm pretty sure that they probably won't go for Cruz. I have full confidence predicting that. So let's play Christie. Now, Christie said some things in response to attacks by Rubio that I think were flat-out lies, but I have to give him points for style, because I think...
See what I mean about these stupid debates?
I know, but you listen to the audience, and you kind of gauge reaction, and Christie just has this ability to kind of swat people away. Let's play this next clip, too.
I'd like to interrupt this debate on the floor of the Senate. to actually answer the question you asked, which was on entitlements. Do you remember that, everybody? This was a question on entitlements.
I'll answer and the entitlement
reason,
question.
And the reason, now you already had your chance, Mark, you blew it. Here's the thing. The fact is, the reason why.
Okay, yeah, that was basically there was an exchange between Cruz and Rubio over value added tax, whether Cruz's business flat tax was a value added tax. I originally said it definitely wasn't. Now I'm going to have to back to, on Twitter. I said that on Thursday night. I'm going to have to backtrack a little bit. It has. Characteristics of a value-added tax. However, when people think value-added tax, they think Europe and his tax plan. Read through it. It's definitely not anything like what you see in Europe, okay? Whether you like it or not, that's something you're going to have to decide. But anyway, they spent their time talking about that interchange, and the question was originally about entitlements. So I thought Christie's response to him, no, you had a chance. You blew it. That was great.
No, he's good at that sort of thing.
Yep. Another clip where I think Christie did, this was probably his best moment. We're going to have to go in with a little disclaimer, though, because, again, he didn't tell quite the whole truth. But let's go ahead and play clip three.
No, absolutely not. The president wants to do things without working with his Congress, without working with the legislature, without getting the consent of the American people. And the fact is that that's not a democracy. That's a dictatorship. And we need to be very, very concerned about that. See, here's the thing. I don't think the founders put the Second Amendment as number two by accident. I don't think they dropped all the amendments into a hat and picked them out of a hat. I think they made the Second Amendment because they thought it was just that important. The fact is, in New Jersey, what we have done is to make it easier now to get a conceal and carry permit. We have made it easier to do that, not harder. And the way we've done it is properly through regulatory action, not by signing unconstitutional executive orders. This guy is a petulant child. That's what he is. I mean, you know.
Okay, we can stop it there.
Neil, let's think.
That's one of the few things that Christie said I could really get behind.
I know. But as far as making the carry permits easier to get in New Jersey, we just recently had somebody from his state on our show not that long ago, whom Christie pardoned for a gun violation.
And give him props for that.
Yeah, I give props for that.
Brian Aitken.
Brian's statement to us is that it's nearly impossible to get a carry permit in New Jersey. So I would really like to hear from Governor Christie what exactly he's done to make getting a carry permit easier in New Jersey, because that's not what I'm hearing from people on the ground. You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and this is Shane Vanner with Brian Myers on Truth Network 99.3 FM, and we're talking about the GOP debate on Thursday night. Cruz responded to a New York Times hit piece, and this was also a good moment for him, I believe. Clip four.
Senator Cruz, the New York Times is reporting that you failed to properly disclose $1 million in loans from Goldman Sachs and Citibank during your Senate race. Your campaign says it was inadvertent. $1 million is inadvertent.
Well, Maria, thank you for passing on that hit piece on the front page of the New York Times. You know, the nice thing about the mainstream media, they don't hide their views. The New York Times a few weeks back had a columnist who wrote a column saying anybody but Cruz had that actually another. That same columnist wrote a column comparing me to an evil demonic spirit from the movie It Follows that jumps apparently from body to body possessing people. So, you know, the New York Times and I don't exactly have the warmest of relationships. Now, in terms of their really stunning hit piece, what they mentioned is when I was running for Senate, unlike Hillary Clinton, I don't have masses of money in the bank, hundreds of millions of dollars. When I was running for Senate, just about every lobbyist, just about all of the establishment opposed me in the Senate race in Texas. And my opponent in that race was worth over $200 million. He put a $25 million check up from his own pocket to fund that campaign. And my wife Heidi and I, we ended up investing everything we own. We took a loan against our assets to invest it in that campaign to defend ourselves against those attacks. And the entire New York Times attack is that I disclosed that loan on one filing with the United States Senate that was a public filing, but it was not on a second filing with the FEC. Both of those filings were public, and yes, I made a paperwork error disclosing it on one piece of paper instead of the other, but if that's the best hit the New York Times has got, they better go back to the well.
And I agree. And we get how much time we have, Ron. Okay, we have time. I do want to be fair to Rubio. He did draw some blood on Cruz, so let's play that clip real quick.
This is an interesting point when you talk about immigration. Ted Cruz, you used to say you supported doubling the number of green cards. Now you say that you're against it. You used to support a 500% increase in the number of guest workers. Now you say that you're against it. You used to support legalizing people that were here illegally. Now you say you're against it. You used to say that you were in favor of birthright citizenship. Now you say that you are against it. And by the way, it's not just on immigration. You used to support TPA. Now you say you're against it. I saw you on the Senate floor flip your vote on crop insurance because they told you it would help you in Iowa. And last week we all saw you flip your vote on ethanol in Iowa for the same reason.
Okay.
That is not consistent conservatism. That is.
We're going to stop there. Cruz, after this was like a minute and a half, and Cruz had 30 seconds to respond to all of that.
That's where he got him. He nailed him at the end with no chance for a rebuttal.
Right.
That was
right.
Strategically, that was great stuff.
It was. It was good. It was a good move on Rubio's part. Unfortunately, a lot of what he had to say was not true.
Feature that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, here's the thing. Now, it's disappointing. Rubio used to run such a positive campaign. And that's kind of gone out the window, and it's getting ugly.
How many of these guys are running a positive campaign?
Hardly anybody anymore. Cruz, now. Well, he's a front runner, though. So
anyway,
yep.
Yeah, it's ugly. It's late. That's the way it is.
Yep. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
So, we kind of want to pick back up on the discussion we had when we were talking about the GOP debate last segment. We looked at that exchange between Senator Cruz and Donald Trump over natural-born citizenship. I just recently saw a Reuters poll that shows that 27%, I believe it was, or 28%, somewhere along those lines, of Republicans believe that Senator Cruz is not qualified or eligible, to be president based on the citizenship issue. I thought I'd talk to somebody.
That's scary.
And I thought I'd talk to somebody much smarter than me about this.
You don't want me to comment
really
on that.
The bar is low there, I have to admit. The bar is extremely low. But this is a guy who wrote an article that I actually refer people to a lot. William Jacobson goes by Bill. He's the founder of Legal Insurrection and College Insurrection. And he's also a clinical professor of law and the director of Securities Law Clinic. Of the Securities Law Clinic at Cornell Law School in Ithaca, New York. Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, Bill.
Thanks for having me on.
So natural born citizenship, this is not a settled thing?
It's not a. I don't like the word settled.
I
think that it's pretty clear that Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio fall within an acceptable definition. But I don't like the word settled because that presumes that it has been definitively decided by the Supreme Court, which it's never been decided, never really been addressed in any meaningful way. So I don't like the word settled, but by saying I don't like the word settled, that doesn't mean I think there's a legitimate dispute about it. So I'm happy to get into that, but sure. I just don't like the word settled in this context.
Well, so Bill, tell us what we have with respect to legal precedent and so on and so forth that would lead us to believe what you said earlier, which is that these guys are qualified.
Sure. The term natural-born citizen is used only once in the Constitution, and it has to do with qualification for president. So there's no definition, there's no explanation in the Constitution. And where you start, where we should always start in interpreting the Constitution is with the words of it. But here the words don't really help us very much because there's no explanation and it's not used anyplace else. But I do think the words are important because what is not in the Constitution is a term which has been frequently used historically of native-born citizen. If the framers of the Constitution, and this is how you interpret any statute or any law or anything, that you assume they meant by not using certain words, that's very significant. So the fact that the term native-born citizen is not a requirement, I think is extremely significant because it signals that had the framers wanted to require that only somebody born within the territory of the United States could be president, they could have very easily used the term native-born citizen. So that's extremely important.
So was... At the time of the Constitution was being written, were there countries that used that standard native-born citizenship?
Well, that is one of the historical framings, and that's what some people are trying to claim now. But the fact of the matter is that even Britain, and what the Supreme Court has said is that interpreting the Constitution when it's unclear what a phrase means, you do look to whether there was a common understanding based on British common law of a particular term, because it's presumed that the framers were familiar with British common law at the time they framed the Constitution. The problem is British law was not clear on the subject, and in my article that I wrote in 2013, I went through this in great detail. Britain didn't have the term natural-born citizen. It had the term natural-born subject.
Yeah.
And if we're going to say that words matter, and you can't simply say that natural-born subject is synonymous with natural-born citizen. But even if you did, Britain had, depending on which colony they were in, depending what point in history, they used many different definitions of who would become a natural-born subject of the king. And that included both territorial, but it also included parental lineage. That if you were born to a subject of the king, that you could also be a natural-born subject. So in looking at British law, both common law and statutes, it doesn't give us a clear answer as to what this term means. And that's where a lot of people are slipping up. Like Ann Coulter wrote a piece, and she cited something called Calvin's case from the 1600s, a British case dealing with territorial becoming a natural-born subject through territorial birth. But that was 150 years before, and there was many other British laws, British statutes, British cases, which did not provide that sort of clarity. So what I can say fairly definitively was that there was no clear and common understanding of British law on the subject of who would become a natural-born subject as it related to territory, because British law provided in different places in the world and at different times many different standards. So we have a term in the Constitution that is not explained in the Constitution, is not explained no matter what anybody will say and cherry pick a case here or cherry pick something there, is not explained by British law. But to me, looking at the text, what could natural born citizen mean other than you gained your citizenship through birth?
Okay.
I've never heard a logical explanation of what that term could mean other than you gain your citizenship through birth. So to me, looking at it, we have a term that certainly suggests citizenship gained through birth. We have no clear and common understanding. There is nothing. Many scholars dating back decades ago have studied the writings of the framers, the debate at the Constitutional Convention. There is nothing to suggest that they had any definition in mind for this. And so what you get is a situation where you have a term which appears to relate to gaining citizenship mm-hmm. through birth. Identifiable, demonstrable, alternative definition. And so we're in a situation where people are just literally taking theories about what it means. They say, well, there was a European philosopher, Vattel, and mm-hmm. in his treatise, he spoke about natural-born citizenship being through, you know, where you're born and your parentage and things
right.
like that. But there's no evidence that the framers considered that. And in fact, his treatise, as translated into English at the time the Constitution was enacted, did not use that term. That term was only used in later editions.
So interesting.
And I've written on this, this is an argument you can't win with people, because every time this comes up, they'll pull some obscure historical reference out. You just can't win it.
Okay? Right.
But just because you can't win it, because people keep pulling stuff out, and then it takes them 5 minutes to put it out there, takes you 5 days to research it to prove that they're not right.
Right.
And by the time you've done completing your research, they've come up with some new obscure historical reference, and every one of them, I have 10,000 words, I have gone through all of the major arguments purporting to claim that there's a legal basis why you have to both be born in the U.S. and both parents have to be citizens. And they are pure speculation. There is
right.
nothing substantive they can point to. And that's why I come to the conclusion, because I do consider myself somebody who takes the wording of the Constitution and the intent of the framers seriously, and that should be what we look to. You have a text which I think suggests that someone who gains citizenship through birth is a natural-born citizen. You have nothing that anybody can point to that's other than rank speculation that it means something else. And therefore, I don't believe that we should be excluding people from running who appear to be qualified based upon the plain terms of the Constitution, based upon hypothetical speculative theories, many of which don't even hold water. And so that's my view. That's why I don't believe it's a serious question. The Supreme Court has never addressed it. And this is typical of what they do. They will find, for example, there was a famous Supreme Court case involving a Chinese.
Can I interrupt you for a second, and we'll get back to that?
Sure.
Because I think Brian's got a question. You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio on Truth Network 99.3 FM. This is Shane Vanner, Brian Myers. We have William Jacobson, a clinical professor of law at Cornell Law School, as well as founder of Legal Insurrection. I highly encourage you to check out legalinsurrection.com. Brian, could you want to jump in there with your question?
Well, yeah, he was moving in that direction. It occurs to me that this could very easily, in a certain scenario, indeed get litigated. And so my question to you, Bill, is if... Let's say, for example, that at some point in the future, whether in this election cycle or the next or so on and so forth, that we would have a candidate win the election that has this sort of issue hanging over their head, as it were, and the opposing party then takes it to court. Is this something that the Supreme Court then would indeed take up? And if so, would you care to speculate on where they would come down?
Sure. I think it's extremely unlikely that the Supreme Court or any federal court would consider this on the merits, on the substance of it. Now, Donald Trump at the debate last night said, well, even if there's a 1% chance, we can't risk it. I don't even think there's a 1% chance, but you never know. But, of course, every year in the United States, a certain number of people get hit by lightning, okay? But that doesn't mean you lead your life and never leave the house for fear of being hit by lightning. And I think that's a good analogy here. Multiple federal courts have refused in the Obama context to rule on this issue, and I'll explain why. So the mere fact that, yes, there is a possibility, just like there's a possibility you could get hit by lightning, that the Supreme Court may want to weigh in on this. But I think it's extremely unlikely. And the reason the courts, the federal courts, have refused to get involved in the Obama case is because of two legal doctrines. One is the doctrine of standing. Who has the legal right to challenge this? And that's something where virtually all of the Obama challenges got thrown out, that a voter, that people like that don't have the right to challenge it. I don't think any candidate has ever challenged it, so I don't know if another candidate could challenge it, but that remains to be seen.
But so Secretary of State, maybe?
I don't think so. But that's the first hurdle. You would have to get a litigant who is willing to bring the case, who has standing, who has the legal right to go into court to challenge it. I don't know if the Democratic nominee would have that right. I don't think so, but that's the first issue. The second issue is what they call justiciability. In fact, I was just looking at a Law Review article from about a decade ago on this issue.
Less than 2 minutes, Bill.
Sure. The courts do not get involved in what they call purely political issues, okay? And that was the whole thing where people said the courts should not have taken the Bush versus Gore challenge, in that election. So courts don't like to make political decisions, even though we know a lot of their decisions have political implications.
Right.
They don't like to make purely political decisions. So historically, courts have refused to rely to even rule on this because of the standing problem and the justiciability problem. I don't see that changing.
Okay. All right, so I thought it was interesting. Did you think Cruz had a good rebuttal to Trump Thursday evening?
From a political point of view, absolutely. They didn't really get into the legalities of it, but politically, basically what he said is, you announced, Donald Trump, whatever it was, 2 months ago, that you had your lawyers look at this and I was fine. And now you're telling me that I'm not. That's only because I'm gaining on you. And
right.
Trump acknowledged that.
Right.
Beautiful. I appreciate that. Honestly, Trump did say that, yes, because you're doing a little better. That's why I'm raising it now.
Right. Yeah. And as far as a political move, I mean, he's raising a lot of questions. And hopefully, I'm a Cruz supporter, so I'm hoping he can overcome it. But thank you, Bill, for coming on.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
This is Caffeinate Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org. This is our segment where we're talking about news you can use.
News you can use.
Yep. Walmart is closing 269 stores, AP reports. more than half of them in the U.S., and another big chunk in its challenging Brazilian market. The stores being shuttered account for, it sounds really bad, but it's really just a fraction of the company's 11,000 stores worldwide and less than 1% of its global revenue. But this is the, you know, the fantastic Obama economy here.
Indeed.
That's causing Walmart to close stores. More than 95% of the stores set to be closed in the U.S., the AP reports, are within 10 miles of another Walmart. So don't worry about, if you're a consumer, don't worry about necessarily being ultimately, you know, really, really inconvenienced. It's just, we don't know how many people are going to end up losing their jobs, and that's not good. An RNC member, Politico Reports, urges the party to rally against Trump. A Republican National Committee man delivered a call to arms aimed at Donald Trump during a closed-door GOP meeting on Thursday. The Republican National Committee met this week in Charleston for their winter meeting. He urged his colleagues to take a forceful stand against those who were destroying the party's brand. What exactly is the party's brand anymore? Retreat? Surrender? There's a reason Trump is
Kleenex.
there's a reason that Trump is leading in the polls like he is. He says, you can argue with me, but we're almost terrorized as members of our party. Shut up, toe the line, embrace each other, let's go forward. I understand that, but there's a limit to loyalty, and I am loyal to this party by speaking out on these very issues. How is he terrorized? I'm kind of interested, you know, and that's an interesting comment to make. Another political story. Bush donors await green light to jump ship. By the way, U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham is the first ex-presidential candidate to endorse a campaign, and he decided to endorse Jeb Bush. It's kind of like, I'm going to jump on the Titanic while it's sinking. Politico talked to nearly two dozen major donors, and most say they are waiting for what one veteran Republican and former Bush 43 administration appointee described as the family hall pass to jump to another campaign after the New Hampshire primary. I'm resigned to it being over, frankly. It's really disappointing, said one top Bush Wall Street donor. I'd urge him to get out after New Hampshire if he doesn't do well, but he probably won't. The deterioration of the Bush campaign has been a humbling experience for his fundraisers. A year ago, even before he was a candidate, Bush's team was locking down donors across the country and getting commitments for six- and seven-figure checks with little trouble. Donors were pitted against each other to see who could raise more and be in the good graces of the man who at the time was described by many in the Bush world as the inevitable nominee. How far the man has fallen, and just embrace the fact that I'm going to probably mispronounce words. It's okay.
You know, for a couple. No, I actually was referring to.
I thought
silly,
you were like
no.
About how I pronounced it.
No, I was
okay.
I was actually incredulous
okay.
at the notion that anybody thought he was going to be the inevitable nominee.
I know, and
here's the irony. We talked about this last week. This is a guy that a couple of weeks ago had spent over $40 million, and he's getting no traction.
Yeah.
And he had spent over $40 million. During that same period, Donald Trump had spent about $200,000.
Right.
About that. I'm not a Trump fan. I'm just saying this is the reality of this campaign.
Yeah, Trump. Trump though has had a lot of earned media attention.
No question.
So, which has taken him far, and now they're starting to, he's not doing as well in the polls. He's starting to throw, $2 million a week in TV and radio ads in Iowa and New Hampshire, something that they probably didn't think they were going to have to do, but now they're going to have. Now they.
I
have
think
to
they
do
were
it.
Planning on doing that
well,
though. Regardless,
yeah, I think they're focusing more on Iowa. Because actually, New Hampshire, he's still in pretty decent shape poll wise.
And we're going to have to see what kind of effect this campaign has.
Well, I wrote a piece for Breitbart this week, and basically, this is a Trump versus Cruz race in Iowa. according to Real Clear Politics, there is a 0.5 difference, half a point difference between Cruz and Trump. Cruz having a slight edge, but really this is pretty much a statistical dead heat. 52% of voters polled in all the polling averages are either Trump or Cruz. So this is very much a race between these two.
Half a point is completely meaningless.
I know.
I mean,
so
it's beyond meaningless, really.
This is dead heat. This is a dead heat in Iowa. So, anyway, this is probably the best chance to derail the Trump train comes in Iowa. And some questions I brought up in the Breitbart piece is, like, for instance, Trump has had these huge crowds, you know, and at the events he's hosted here in Iowa.
Going back to last summer.
However, how many of these are independent and crossover votes, and how many will actually register as Republicans to caucus? That is the million-dollar question. Because if he can get that to happen, then he could walk away with this. But that's a tall order. Cruz is reaching out to more your traditional
right.
likely caucus goer, so he doesn't have that additional step, and he's got a great organization on the ground. So,
well, and I can't speak to Iowa in particular, but nationwide, get this, nationwide, Trump's support includes 20% of Democrats, and I think somewhere in the neighborhood of double digits in independents.
Right.
So he's got to have a big chunk of that support base in Iowa to make this happen.
And it's going to even be harder down the road in some of these primary states that have even tighter rules when it comes to party registration. Last story I want to bring up, it's a huge story, actually. The Anglican primates, it's the leaders of the different denominations that make up the Anglican Communion, basically decide to suspend the Episcopal Church, which is the American branch of the Anglican Communion, and over their embrace of same-sex marriage. This is interesting. They have a 12-point statement or 8-point statement. I just want to read part of it. It is our unanimous desire to walk together. However, given the seriousness of these matters, we formally acknowledge this distance by requiring that for a period of 3 years, the Episcopal Church no longer represent us on ecumenical interfaith bodies, should not be appointed or elected to an internal standing committee, that while participating in the internal bodies of the Anglican Communion, they will not take part in decision-making on any issues pertaining to doctrine or polity. I thought that was fascinating.
Well, it is. I'm still a little confused. I mean, they've got this 3-year period here.
What's going to happen at the end of 3 years?
Well, that's one question, and I'm struggling to understand what exactly the organic relationship is between the two parties.
This
isn't a divorce.
No, but this could be the first.
This is a separation.
I think so. This may lead up to the quote unquote divorce, and we may see a schism in the Anglican Communion, where it looks like I think the Episcopal Church is on, unless they turn this around, they're on track of getting booted out. So, which for those who are faithful Anglicans, I'm sure that would be something. While nobody wants to see a division like that, I'm sure, would be happy to see that their leadership is standing on biblical orthodoxy.
Well, I tell you what.
Something we'll be watching.
Yes, and more churches need to draw the line in the sand.
Absolutely. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Have you ever noticed that the person who committed to meeting you halfway is a real bad judge of distance? That gap can cause some serious conflict. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. If you're in that 50-50 relationship that feels more like 50-20, Why not consider changing up the goal? If you're in a conflict, then you really have 100% of a conflict, regardless of who caused the most and who has tried the hardest. And chances are the other party thinks that you're a poor judgment of distance too. Jesus said, if your brother offends you, go to him. But he also said, if you realize you have offended your brother, you go. No one should be drawing a line in the sand and waiting for the other to cross over. Rather than a 50-50 approach, why not be committed 100% to resolving the conflict? If you're stuck at the 50, 60, or even 80% level, give us a call at 515-635-5465 or check us out online at crosswalkcounseling.org.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. About the finish line. I'd like to encourage you to check out CaffeinatedThoughts.com because not only do we do a radio show, we also blog too. Like us on Facebook. Go to Facebook.com/CAFF, C-A-F-F, Thoughts. Follow us on Twitter, which is also, our Twitter handle is CAFF, C-A-F-F, Thoughts. We'd love for you to like us because, you know, we're needy and we need people to like us to help boost our self-esteem, and follow us on Twitter because, hey, we've got good things to say. So anyway, kick it over to Brian.
Oh, boy. And now, having heard that slobbering over there from the microphone on the left.
Shameless plug.
And now, we've come to my favorite part of the show. We are about to share a story that is truly unbelievable. Yet, you know it must be true because
you can't make this stuff up.
This is an AP story out of Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh police are searching for two would-be carjackers who apparently can't drive a stick shift. Police have been looking for the pair since Tuesday night when one of them tapped on a 28-year-old's driver's side window with a gun. The two ordered the man out of his car and demanded money. When the victim said he had none, they demanded his cell phone and car keys. Police spokeswoman Emily Schaefer says, when the victim told the suspect the car had a manual transmission, they decided they didn't want it, and they ran away.
I can't drive a stick, man.
There was a point in my life where I could say, I could feel your pain.
I got to remember this. Maybe you can con the con.
So perhaps, I'd be kind of interesting to do a query on this. Do owners of stick shift, you know, manual transmission cars have their cars carjacked less frequently than those with automatic transmission.
That's interesting. I wonder
which is a more robbery proof car?
Well, now it depends on the thief. If the thief is looking for, you know, high end cars,
that's true.
Then that's,
I don't think we have manual transmission Ferraris, do we?
Exactly.
So
we got a twofer today, I understand.
We do. Yes.
A bonus.
This is out of Reuters. Luck was not on the side of a Texas man who ventured out to buy a lottery ticket this week. The 67-year-old Fort Worth man was walking to a store in his neighborhood on Monday in hopes of winning the upcoming $1.5 billion.
That's a billion, billion with a B.
Yeah. Powerball jackpot when he fell through a deep hole at a construction site, landing in the in water at the bottom, the Fort Worth Police Department said. The man's concerned family reported him missing after darkness fell. It apparently took that long. I guess he just kind of wanders off and doesn't return until nighttime. And during
Wait a minute.
Well, I guess we don't know how long ago. You're right. That wasn't fair.
Well, no, the guy lived, I take it, right?
We're getting there.
Yeah, we're getting there.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
Like, man, what happened to this guy?
Yeah, so darkness fell, and during a search of the area, officers noticed a construction hole and found the man at the bottom of the 7-foot hole, or 7-foot opening, police said. Officers were able to climb into the hole and give the man aid before pulling him to the surface, police said. His identity was not released.
I bet he's thankful for that.
Right. Because of the quick thinking and dedication the officers exhibited, this man and his family can say they truly won the biggest lottery of all, the department said on Facebook. First of all, I'm surprised they actually went to look for him because typically you can't file a missing persons report until like 48 hours later.
Oh, wow.
So they must have said, this is just totally unusual that he's not back yet. Could you please look for him? But you know, you might as well just not even bother getting the lottery ticket when you, mm-hmm. if you fall in a hole going to it.
That's a good point.
That's I think that's a sign.
This is pretty cool, though. Like you say, not only did they look for him right away, but they went and looked in this construction hole.
I mean, right.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it is. So kudos to the Fort Worth Police Department for doing Indeed. A good job. Yeah.
And see, if that would happen in Chicago, the guy would still be laying at the bottom of the hole.
That's true. That's true.
Well, send your You Can't Make This Stuff Up ideas to story@caffeinatedthoughts.com. We'll give you the credit or the blame if we use your suggestion on the show.
This is Shane Vanderhart with Brian Myers. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll see you next week.
Take care, everybody.